Well, Wisconsin takes its deer hunting very seriously, and this year is no different. If you're wondering what you just heard, those were some intrepid deer calls from our outdoor guys. We'll get to them in just a bit. An army of blaze orange-clad men, women, and youngsters will head into the woods in search of their trophy bucks and freezer fillers. Wisconsin's 2013 gun deer hunt begins Saturday, and we're going to talk all things deer this hour on the West Side Outside. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined in studio by the Outdoor Guys. They are, in no particular order, Outdoors Editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, Joe Knight. Welcome back, Joe.
Pleased to be here.
Good to have you. And host of Northland Adventures, Dave Carlson. Good to see you again, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And we've got a special guest joining us by phone this hour, Mike Zechmeister. He's the Department of Natural Resources Northern Region Program Manager and one of the state's top experts on chronic wasting disease. Mike, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. I'm excited to be on the show.
All right. That excitement, we'll see if it lasts throughout the hour. But
say, Mike, how did we sound?
Hey, you didn't sound too bad. A little rusty at start, but you gained some momentum there. And I was starting to get a little excited, I guess.
A little flustered?
Yeah.
I'm wondering what you know the rest of our listeners might have thought to hear that just show up on the
radio. Obviously the grunt and groans of the rutting season. I mean, where is the rut right now, do you think? Where do we stand? It's always curious to talk about it with hunters because they know that it might enable them to see more deer if the season coincides with the rut.
Yeah, I talked to several bull hunters this morning, and they saw some pretty good activity over the weekend, some bucks chasing does. Personally, I saw some fresh scrapes that were just visited, so it's hanging on, and that's good. I thought it might be completely over for the opener of the gun season, but I think it's going to be dragging into this next weekend, which is cool.
That is very cool.
Quick question for you, Mike. Is it true that the rut is more delayed up north, with the idea being that then the fawns are born later, or is that just kind of a hunter mythology?
There's a little bit of mythology there, and there's several schools of thought out on the timing of the rut. Phase of the moon is probably the most prominent theory on it, and I think that does hold a lot of credence. But, you know, there's other factors that serve as triggers, like temperature and whatnot. So cloud cover, I think that also influences just the tweak things, and I think we got a good tweak happening.
Very cool. Let me just jump in. I hadn't even finished with my introduction, and Dave went straight to questions. I appreciate the excitement, but I just wanted to let listeners know that if you want to call in and join the conversation, the number is 1-800-228-5615. We're going to talk about the hunt, some deer numbers, some predicted how active they're being. Then we'll get to chronic wasting disease a bit and talk with Mike about that, specifically relating to a report out of Illinois that kind of compares Wisconsin and Illinois, their approaches to CWD. So the number again, 1-800-228-5615 to get on the air with the Outdoor Guys and Mike Zechmeister of the DNR. With that, fire away, gentlemen. Joe, I saw that you had a story that ran today looking at some deer numbers around the region. And, I mean, are people expecting it to be a decent hunting season in the western Wisconsin area?
What I'm hearing from the DNR, and since we have a biologist on, we can ask him how things are
Absolutely.
Up north, that things are pretty good where we are. In western Wisconsin, all the units are, except a few woodland units, are above goal. And for some reason, there's one in the middle of Eau Claire County, a farm unit that has plenty of deer, but not enough to trigger this. And one thing we can talk about today, too, is that this will apparently be the last year where we're talking about units being above goal.
That's right.
Or even the units, those are all due to change soon. Up north, it's a different story. I know bow hunters and biologists up there say it's kind of slim pickings. So maybe Mike can tell us otherwise.
Yeah, what's the story up north, up in the Spooner, Gordon area and all that?
Well, we did, you know, we always do a survey in the summertime on fawn production, called our summer deer observations. And what we try to do is just figure out, just through observations out in the field, this is all, you know, good field data, how many fawns per doe. and we got a lot of observers out there. And what we saw in several units out in the northwest, some pretty low numbers. And that kind of reinforces our earlier theory from last winter. We, as you recall, we had a really long winter, below normal temperatures going into spring, got some late snowfalls. We kind of predicted back then that, you know, any does that were carrying fawns, maybe some trouble for them, resulting in less, for example, twins being born or triplets. And I think that's what we saw in some of these units up in the northwest. So bottom line is I think we had some reduced recruitment throughout the north this year. So probably less fawns on the landscape.
Bear and bobcat joining wolves as the predators, too, this spring on the fawns?
Yeah, at least with, you know, our deer study and with the elk that we monitor, a pretty good indicator of type of mortality from bears. We didn't see a lot of bear mortality this year, at least on elk. And that's, again, that could be timing of calving also. But, you know, we've been trying to increase the number of tags for bear. We're trying to reduce the population, especially in the northwest part of the state. Last year we increased the number of kill permits by 33%. Remains to be seen yet whether we really had a significant increase in kill.
Mike, I did one of the bow hunters I interviewed for this story I did has been hunting up north of Barnes on acorn ridges, and he said he's been seeing a lot more bear coming along eating the acorns than he has deer, and he that was his wish that DNR would beef up the bear kill permits a little bit and bring the bear population down a little.
Yeah, I'm going to be weighing in on that for this fall. I'd like to see a pretty significant increase in the number of bear tags in the Zone D. That's kind of my position.
Yeah, Joe, in your story, and maybe Mike can comment on this as well, you mentioned that late spring, and that was a long winter, I guess, is another way to say it. But what was it? How does that affect the fawns and the birthing?
Yeah, I think Mike was just mentioning that a little bit.
I realize that now.
They just don't have as many fawns. Well, there's some outright mortality, but
is it because Mike they're starving or what?
Well, we did have a lot of reports this last spring of starved looking deer, and some deer died, direct mortality, and in addition to some deer dying, I don't think it was a complete die off by any means. Nothing really significant. But in addition to direct mortality, we have what I call indirect mortality. And that means any pregnant does out there, they may reabsorb that fetus or maybe have an abortion because they just can't support that youngster in their tummy, for lack of better terms. Hmm. And so you'll probably saw less fawns being born.
Well, the bear situation, just before we leave that a little bit, how much should it be increased? And why do you attribute did I hear you say that the harvest was down, lower than expected?
No, we don't have the final numbers yet. I haven't seen the final numbers. They may be out there. But kind of some of the reports I got from registration stations around the Northwest is that the harvest didn't increase by 33%. We increased the kill tags by 33%, but I have to wait to see those final numbers.
And with the bears, these predator studies that the DNR is doing, you're finding that they are pretty efficient predators on young deer and elk. Am I right with that? I don't think a bear could catch a big, healthy deer very easily, but certainly they seem to be good at finding the fawns.
Yeah, and it kind of depends upon when the bears break their winter sleep and when are we having either, in the case of elk, calving or with deer fawning, that timing. If they line up, bears are hungry when they wake up from their winter sleep. And my analogy is that they're kind of like a vacuum cleaner walking through the woods. And they're going to eat whatever they find. And we do know that if that timing is right, that they're breaking out of their winter sleep and fawns are being born right about that same time, it can be pretty significant.
A reminder, we're talking about the 2013 gun deer hunt and all things outdoors with the outdoor guys, Joe Knight. He is the outdoors editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, and Dave Carlson, who is host of Northland Adventures, at least for now, and we'll get to that in a bit. But also joining us is Mike Zechmeister of the Department of Natural Resources. He is based in Spooner, and we'll get into some chronic wasting disease discussions here in a bit. If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. The phone lines are wide open for you. 1-800-228-5615. Mike, I got a question. I remember hearing when Dr. Kroll came through and did his meetings and his speeches and whatnot, building up to the or leading up to the report that he put out. He mentioned that the Northwest areas got a lot of aging forest, and that that is another contributor for low deer numbers farther up north. Is that? Do you agree with that?
I do agree with it, and I tend to look at some of this. Reduced recruitment that we're seeing. We don't like to hang our hat on 1 year's data. We like to look at trends. And the trend in northern Wisconsin is that recruitment is going down. And it's not because we're shooting too many does, because, again, we look at the number of fawns born per doe. That's what we observe out in the field. We're seeing that ratio go down. And the only thing we can really attribute it to is declining habitat.
And how do we combat that? I mean, do we get out there and start planting a lot of pine, young pine, or what?
Is it mostly on private or public land this habitat shortage is occurring?
Well, you know, with increased forest fragmentation, meaning let's say somebody had 320 acres and all of a sudden they start selling their parcel off and somebody buys, you know, 10-acre parcel here, 15-acre parcel over there, that has an impact because the landowner may not want to have any logging done. The key thing in the northern forest is timber harvest, and good timber harvest that you get a diversity of young trees growing back. Clear cuts are great for deer. They're great for rough grouse, you name it. Young forest is the way we have to go, and there is being more and more interest in what we call a young forest initiative in northern Wisconsin.
All right,
I know the National Forest has been a little reluctant to cut aggressively. The part of that reason being every time they have a timber sale, they get a lawsuit to go along with it. I think are they beefing up their cutting at all?
They have great plans to beef up their cutting. Whether it actually happens will remain to be seen. But we're definitely hearing some encouraging things from the Forest Service. And just to put in a plug for our county forest program, and most of our counties up north and even into central Wisconsin, county forest has a lot of land, and they do an outstanding job managing their forests, very aggressive timber cutting strategies. Hats off to them for that, because they create great wildlife habitat.
Well, say, gentlemen, we have our first call of the morning, and we're going to go to the phones right now, and it's kind of a segue into our next segment about chronic wasting disease. But Eugene in Knapp is on the air. Eugene, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
I'd like to find out what the process is for CWD testing, where to go, what the costs are that I might expect.
All right, very good. Mike, why don't you fill them in?
Yeah. You'll have to go to, you have several options. And with the DNR, at least in northwest Wisconsin, we're going to be collecting CWD samples at three stations in Shell Lake, Baronet, and Spooner. And you're outside that area. So your other option, probably the most viable option, would be to go to a local veterinarian and ask them to tell them that you'd like to get your deer tested for CWD, and they will do it. The bad thing about it, or at least the negative, is that you will get charged for that. If you come to one of the DNR stations, at this point it's no cost.
And what is that cost ballpark if you did decide to save the trip and go to a local veterinarian?
Yeah. My understanding is it's a little over $100 to have that tested.
When are the hours of testing at those three stations, Mike?
We're going to be there probably from about 8 o'clock in the morning till about 8 o'clock at night.
All 9 days of the season or just?
Opening weekend for sure. After then, we'll probably be down to like maybe an 8-hour day, maybe starting at about 10 o'clock. But if you call the DNR office in Spooner, we'll get your deer sample.
Elsewhere in the state, CWD testing is occurring, continues in the south, and of course, and other places as well.
Eugene, thanks so much for the call. Go ahead.
Bring the head in, what do you need?
All you need to do is bring the head in. Make sure you leave a little bit of the neck on the deer, maybe about 8-9 inches. I know that's a little hard to say, but we don't want you to cut it off right at the base of the skull because we have to get at those lymph nodes.
Okay. And Mike, how long before he gets those results back?
We have a really short turnaround time. It's around 2 weeks or so.
And he might, if he's really worried about CWD, he might want to hold off eating any of the venison from that deer until he gets those results back.
If that's what makes him more comfortable, that's fine.
We should note that NAP is a long way from any other positive detects of CWD in the state.
Right. Well, Eugene, there you are. Thanks so much for calling in. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We've got another caller that we'll get to straight away, and Dave and Augusta, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning, guys. I like the show this morning. Gives the opportunity to talk deer hunting before the biggest deer hunt of the year.
Mm-hmm.
My question is for Dave. Dave, I've got two questions. The first one, did you get my musky lure that I dropped off at the studio for you?
Yeah, I did. I haven't had a chance to get it wet yet, though. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. I was up to my cabin in Hayward last weekend, and I seen a lot more deer along the road crossing in front of me and also in the woods that I've seen probably in the previous 10 or 15 years. It was just, and probably because of the rut was going, but boy, I tell you, it seemed like a lot of deer. Hopefully that's, I know that was just one small 5 or 10 acre area, but I think it looks good for the outlook for the deer hunting loop where my place is up there.
Well, best of luck. Thanks so much for calling in. Hopefully it bodes well for some other hunters in the northern Wisconsin. With that, before we transition into the CWD stuff, I got two basic questions, and more for the outdoor guys. Maybe Mike can jump in on this. But this year, hunters are allowed to use rifles statewide with some restrictions. What's the gist of the new rules, gentlemen? And what are your thoughts on this? If you would like to editorialize, you are free to do so on the air. No one will know. Joe Knight.
Well, I guess part of it is based on the thought with the shotgun was that it doesn't carry as far as a rifle bullet, therefore it's safer.
Mm-hmm.
I think the safety statistics they've kept have not backed that up. I think that it's a wash, or if anything, shotguns might be a little more dangerous.
Yeah, you can get rifled slug.
The other
barrels.
Thought was a little bit of a conservation issue that you can't with a shotgun. If you see a deer on a ridge 200 yards away, you can't pop them like you can with a modern rifle with a scope on it. I think the idea is just to make things uniform. And I have a very early in my outdoor writing career, I violated the shotgun ban. I was new to the area, and I took a gun and went down to Dunn County and shot a deer, and got a call the next day from the warden, and he said, "Well, Joe, we heard you congratulations, you got your deer, but you shot it with the wrong kind of weapon." So I had to pay a fine, and I got an outdoor column out of it. But so I think that's the kind of thing that the DNR is trying to avoid. And I know the governor has said he would like to see the fishing and hunting rules simplified.
So Dunn County, then the counties can still ban Dave Carlson.
Communities can do what they want.
They still can.
Yeah, for safety reasons. You've got some of these towns that are really urbanized townships, and they may want a harvest of deer to be going on, but they prefer the shotgun over the rifle, and otherwise it's statewide. The impact, and I guess I share that view with Joe, that conclusively, I I hunt in rifle areas, always have. I have done a little shotgun hunting for deer, but not much to speak of. And either way, they both can be dangerous, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it all goes back to the handler, I really think, to make this thing work statewide. Right. There was a lot of consternation in Buffalo County when they did go from shotgun to rifle, and they predicted doom and gloom for the deer herd, that there was going to be a lot of wounding and there were going to be a lot of accidents and mm-hmm. so forth. I don't know that that's been the case because Wisconsin, that area plus other areas of Wisconsin, continue to produce large deer. We led the state, North America in Boone and Crockett entries last year when I believe that Mike can probably correct my figures on this. We shot like 368,000 or 386,000, some number of deer. So still the deer herd is strong. The trophy potential is there. I don't know if Mike, have you heard much from up there? Something called APR in Minnesota. It's being tossed around in parts of your area, Barron and Polk counties. Antler point restrictions. There's a study going on in Minnesota right now in the southeast part of the state where they limit it to a 4-point on either side, and youth being an exception, they can take deer, disabled being an exception. Otherwise, they're in the fourth year, I believe it is, of a 5-year study, seeing if they should go permanently with that, and they actually are seeing some market improvement in the antler development by people having to turn down deer that don't measure up to that standard. Have you been following that, and what is being tossed about as proposal in Barron and Polk counties?
Yeah, nothing's been tossed around. We're still kind of following that study to take a look at that. And, there's several schools of thought out on it, antler restrictions. And, whenever you reduce your harvest on bucks, and that's essentially what you're doing, you're going to have more bucks out there, and the chances are more bucks to live longer. And when they get older, that's, of course, when you get larger antlers. So really what we're talking about is reducing the harvest rate on bucks. That's one thing that would be the main thing that would be accomplished by that in Minnesota.
Well, with that, let's take our first break. It's going to be a short break. We'll be back in about a minute. We'll talk about this paper that's been published in Illinois talking about their approach and kind of linking their approach and Wisconsin's kind of comparing and contrasting towards the management of chronic wasting disease. We'll be back with Dave Carlson, Joe Knight, and Mike Zechmeister of the Department of Natural Resources. This is the West Side Outside. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. We've got the outdoor guys on. They are Dave Carlson, host of Northland Adventures, and Joe Knight, of the he's the outdoor editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Also joining us is Mike Zechmeister, Northern Region Program Manager for the Department of Natural Resources. Our phone lines are wide open. We're going to start talking about chronic wasting disease, and I'm sure folks have some thoughts on that. You can give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. You can also check out our Westside Facebook page and leave a comment there. We'll try to get it on the air. So, Mike, I guess this report came out in September, I think, and the Journal Sentinel got a hold of it and wrote a little piece of it. And I guess the center point is they're basically claiming that the sharp shooting and the really aggressive campaign that Wisconsin had back in the early days when CWD broke, they kept up with that, and they're saying they had some success. And linking, they're showing that, the prevalence in certain area down south of Wisconsin, in Wisconsin, has gone up by 20%, and they're saying that it stayed relatively flat in Illinois. The question is this, can we make that comparison based on this one study or not?
My opinion is no.
Why is that?
I think we're comparing apples and oranges here. personally, what we did down south in Wisconsin was probably too much too late, maybe too little too late. The disease already had a catch, a foothold, and doing sharpshooting, you know, was probably effective in some areas to reduce deer numbers, but the disease had a foothold already. Down in Illinois, a little different. Kind of some new pop-ups of CWD. Hats off to them for doing aggressive harvesting, whether it be with the public or with sharpshooting. A lot of the areas down there in the study are actually closed to public hunting. So really the only option in many of those areas were to use sharpshooting. So a lot different scenario down in Illinois compared to Wisconsin, at least down in southern Wisconsin.
You had the CWD deer show up at Shell Lake 2 years ago now, and you did a lot of testing last year. Can you talk about what your testing turned up and what has happened since? And was there pretty good cooperation in turning in the required number of samples?
Yeah, we had great cooperation by hunters, and that's always something that you can depend upon because hunters are always concerned. They're conservationists, so we had great cooperation there. Last year, we had to do the first phase, and that was how widespread is this disease? Has it been here for a long time or not? So what we did was we sampled a big area, like 10 miles radius, collected over 1,000 samples. We didn't pick up any more positives, which was a good thing, and probably is telling us that the disease started out, it's a new disease in this area. So what we're doing now this year is we're really kind of narrowing down that bullseye, and we're really trying to focus in around that Shell Lake area and trying to get more samples in that area. And we figure if we can get 500 samples, that would be great. So we're trying to really locate where the disease is. We think it's around that Washburn-Burnett County area, but we need to keep on testing.
Meanwhile, those baiting and feeding restrictions are still in place?
Baiting and feeding restrictions are still in place for the four-county area. That's correct.
Do you want to name those four counties, Mike?
Yeah. That would be Washburn, Burnett, Barron, and Polk.
Mike, is it possible that there was just some kind of spontaneous mutation that caused a chronic wasting disease in one animal?
You know, that some people believe that can happen. The science doesn't seem to show that. My own personal opinion is that the disease probably entered from some type of illegal carcass dump. Somebody maybe brought a diseased animal up from down south or maybe from out west, harvested that deer and brought it in and dumped it, and another deer picked it up.
So at what point, I mean, if you're not getting any detects, at what point do we stop looking?
That's a good question. You know, past areas around the country where they just picked up one positive, they have found that it takes several years before they pick up another positive, only because it's kind of like trying to find a needle in a haystack. And so it could take several years. I'm hoping that we don't ever find another CWD positive, but in reality, that deer that showed up positive was a 3.5-year-old doe, and she died. At least was ready to die from CWD, so we know she was carrying it for a while. Likely she had some fawns. Likely those fawns were infected with CWD. So there's probably some more deer out there that have CWD. But who knows? Maybe they got harvested 2 years ago and they're off the landscape. You know, we can cross our fingers, but we just need to keep on testing because if we don't, we're kind of putting our head in the
Has there been good compliance on the no feeding and baiting ban?
Yeah, there really has been. You know, what I hear from the law enforcement folks, and they put planes up. They look for baiting and feeding sites, and it's been really great. Of course, you get some people still doing it, but overall, it's been some really good compliance. I think more importantly, a lot of people are saying, hey, we can still shoot deer without baiting deer. In fact, some of the guys, a lot of people are saying, I'm actually seeing more deer, and they attribute it to the ban on baiting deer.
It does seem like there's been somewhat of a public opinion shift on the baiting and feeding in Wisconsin. Gentlemen, would you agree?
Well, it's always been real close, I think 50-50, but I think more and more today people are just backing off and not doing it.
Well, yeah. I guess what I'm citing is this, you know, part of the Deer Trustee report was these citizen action teams and make recommendations. Well, one of the recommendations, of course, is banning feeding statewide, isn't it?
Well, it's always been an issue. With Deer 2000, that was, what, 10 years ago? And it was an issue then, too. And it seems to be that hunters have been split. I don't know if that's changed. I have friends who do bait and friends who think it's not fair chase.
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with these recommendations from these committees or these action teams. So, and let's see here. Well, with baiting and feeding, I mean, would that make it any easier for the DNR to monitor or keep track of CWD? Mike?
Well, we do know that baiting and feeding does just offer another means for a sick deer to pass that sickness on to another deer,
right,
whether it's CWD or some other deer-related disease. So by not having baiting and feeding, it sure does take away another method of transmission. So,
and hopefully
it'll be better for monitoring.
And I don't know if it's quite a follow up or not, but the legislature, in a couple of years ago, or maybe it's been less, but they banned the earn a buck. And is that a tool that the DNR uses to kind of try to cull the herd a little bit when there's in areas with CWD? And did the legislature basically take a tool out of your toolbox?
Yes, they did. There has been a lot of tools taken out of our toolbox in southern Wisconsin, and as a result, the deer population is growing and growing. And where you have a disease that already has a foothold, that's not going to help things. It hasn't helped things for several years. So you're just going to have an increasing deer herd, and you're going to see CWD continue spread down in that area, in my opinion.
And I mean, this prevalence that they in this newspaper report cited it as more than 20% in the core area over the last 11 years, the prevalence has gone up. And you mentioned it's apples to oranges, and you know, Illinois was more aggressive and Wisconsin was not. Was there pushback? I mean, there was some pushback from hunters and people. There was actually some ridicule of the DNR's approach in the early days, was there not, towards CWD?
Definitely.
The eradication idea?
Mm-hmm. And, in fact, Illinois is getting that same pushback.
Sure.
And it's one of the reasons for this article, too, is to try to raise the level of awareness with people that, hey, we are being effective down here. Back off.
Mike, either I've tuned it out or there's something occurring out there. I sense there's less furor, there's less whining, there's less complaining about deer and deer management in the state in the last 6 months. That maybe the discussion and the Kroll report, whatever your thoughts on it, has vented a lot of criticism, and as a result, things are chilling out a little bit. What is your reaction to something like that?
Well, I think whenever you have an avenue for people to vent, it's a good thing because it kind of gets them off their chest. But I'll tell you one thing: I'm expecting that next week and the week after, my phone's going to be ringing off the hook. Especially if we have a brown season, meaning no snow on the ground, hunters going out on Saturday can't see deer as well. With a brown landscape, brown on brown doesn't show up very well, and people are going to be complaining. I hope I'm wrong.
So it's a perennial thing.
Well, it's an up north thing right now, too, Mark. I think one reason that hunters aren't complaining is the deer herd's been growing ever since 2009 when the, you know, we had a combination, I think, of a low deer herd and bad hunting conditions, fog mm-hmm. opening. I'm a little bit interested, though. I mean, we get this glowing report. Wisconsin basically led the country, all states and Canadian provinces, in Boone and Crockett and record book bucks harvested, and we're up there pretty high in numbers of deer. And yet we're basically saying, well, we're just not going to take this anymore. We're going to have a wholesale change in the deer hunting regulations.
Yeah.
And I guess it remains to be seen what the Resources Board will do, but there's going to be major changes in store. I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit, Mike. Different. We're not going to have mandatory in-person registrations anymore, which I'll kind of miss as a deer hunter, as an outdoor writer.
Yeah.
I mean, going there, that's a chance for an interview. It's a chance for DNR to get some blood samples or mm-hmm. university students if anything's going on. And different management units.
A lot of change.
A lot of change. We may not. We won't have this. I guess we'll still have the sex age kill, but it's not sure how they're going to get their age measurements if they do away with the mandatory in person, where you have to bring your deer into a registration station. So it almost seems to me a little bit like the Obamacare rollout. You know, there's some good ideas, but they don't quite have their ducks in a line yet. You ask them ask DNR how they're going to get their age samples, and they say, "Well, we're not quite sure yet." You
know, isn't deer hunting, doesn't it get political enough? You're going to throw in Obamacare now?
The lesson is you had a major change in order, and you weren't quite ready for it with your computer system. Well, DNR is doing a major overhaul, probably based on the Kroll report and some study committees, and yet you say, "Well, are you going to have the sex age kill formula, and if so, how are you going to get your data?
Sure.
What metrics are you going to use?" I mean, we're gonna dumb it down a little bit, so we'll have these committees saying, yes, we want more, the same, or fewer deer in a management unit. Well, how do you know if you're more in 2000, you know, how do you measure from 2013 to 2014 whether you have more or not in the next year?
Mike Zechmeister?
Yeah, you know, with the whole telecheck issue, you know, I think we're moving that way just to make it more convenient for hunters. And we're not talking about a complete rollout of telecheck until probably 2015. So it's not like we have to have answers today how we're going to get our aging sample. I know there's groups of people and teams of people working on that right now. But they got some time to figure that out, and they want to have a good method to get that aging sample. And I'm confident they will come.
What are your thoughts on realigning the management units?
Yeah,
going from 70 some.
Oh, I thought it was more than 100.
Like 130, isn't
it? Yeah, 130 to five.
Yeah, down to about a third of that many.
Yeah,
I think it's great. I think it's great to reduce the number of deer management units. Right now, we're kind of using a micrometer to measure the deer herd, and we don't need to have a micrometer. We can be using, at a minimum, a ruler or a yardstick. We don't have to have such small deer management units. And that's been a recommendation for several years, have larger deer management units. It makes it easier for the hunters. It makes it a heck of a lot better for population estimation, too.
The other option is to go to a county management union system, which would make it maybe a little simpler for hunters, but I think you'd lose a lot of historical data from the current management system.
That's true, but history repeats. You know, we can build history starting today, so that's not a big deal. I think counties would be a little bit easier for these deer management teams that the proposal calls for, because it'd be easier for, you know, people that live in a county. They know which county they want to be on, which team, you know. And so that would make it easier. The problem with counties is that, you know, counties weren't designed based on what the deer habitat was like. Deer management units were designed to kind of group habitat together. There's always some, you know, blips on that. You might have the northern part of one unit, different deer range than the southern part, but overall, it's kind of similar. Counties aren't based that way. A lot of times, county boundaries go right through the middle of a marsh. They don't use definable roads. deer management units use definable roads. I personally think it'd be better just to lump several units together, and that way we could get fewer units.
Yeah. That would help with your statistics, too, if the idea is a bigger unit, you get a little bigger sample size and a little more reliable estimate.
You're right.
These recommendations are still just that, obviously. There will be some more kicks at the cat, but it seems like, does it seem to you that it'll look fairly similar to what the recommendations are, outdoor guys?
I think we're going to have the telephone registration like we now have for turkeys, you know, where you don't go in person. And
geese.
Is that online too, right? Online too?
You do it over the phone for geese. You do it over the phone for turkeys.
It is more convenient. I just have the number in my cell phone, and if I am lucky enough to shoot a turkey, I usually just do it right out in the field. Hey, I shot a turkey, and they ask you some questions. And I think you're talking to a computer with a very nice voice, but...
Yeah.
So I usually screw it up the first time and have to redial, but it's definitely more convenient than driving by. I think it's a little bit easier to cheat that way if that's a concern.
Is that a concern, Mike Seckmeister?
Yeah, getting accurate data is always a concern. The one thing we've always been able to hang our hat on in the history of deer management in the state, at least more recent history, is the actual kill. People normally don't debate how many dead animals got killed, or how many animals got killed out there. Mm-hmm. And those are some hard, fast numbers. Sure, some people question the stubs, so they came in, we brought in boxes of stubs, and they recounted the stubs, and it turned out to be almost exactly what we had reported. But now with Telecheck, it's going to enter another unknown. People are going to say, well, how do you know? How accurate was that? I know somebody that didn't call in their deer. Well, everybody probably knows some people that didn't get their deer registered either. So, again, do we want to use a micrometer or do we want to use a yardstick for measuring our deer management?
I think out west they use yardsticks a lot of the time for tabulating their management goals for elk and antelope and the deer. Because there's not mandatory registration on those animals out there to go to a certain point, you know, to a location to register your deer. They do track it, though, by for example, if you shoot an antelope on private land, you turn in a little stub, and that landowner gets a small payment. And I think it's almost insignificant. It's like $7.50 or something for every animal shot. But it's a way of measuring through that payment how many actually were taken. The landscape is so large and so open, and the herd numbers that you're talking about out there are small, much smaller than Wisconsin or even Minnesota's. But yet they come up with they've come up with a system for managing controlling the amount of tags issued, and looking at weather conditions, winter and so forth, how that's affected the animals, and they make their call based on that. A lot of the conservation wardens have biological backgrounds, and they're part of the management team too. So, and they're out on the move a lot, and their observations count, and I don't know if you've had the experience about there, Mike, but they get by with so-called measuring with the yardstick.
Yep. But as Joel pointed out, Wisconsin has led the nation this year, number one in the nation for Boone and Crockett bucks, and that didn't happen by chance. And if you look at our history, we've been right up there with the number of Boone and Crockett bucks nationwide. So, again, that hasn't happened by chance. So there will be some trade-offs.
I know back, was it in the 1960s when Don Johnson, who we know around here, he started out actually as the outdoor editor of the Leader Telegram and went down and had a long career with the Milwaukee Sentinel before coming back to Dunn County. But the deer hunters not only doubted the DNR herd population estimate, which is a perennial thing, but they also doubted the kill estimate back in those days, because if the DNR if there weren't as many deer out there as the DNR said, how could there be so many deer shot? So Johnson got some reporters and went down and actually went through the deer stubs and called people up and said, you know, are you a real person and did you really shoot a deer? And it turned out that there was actually a deer hunter represented for each one of those stubs. And I think since then, that's the one data point that counters have not questions from the DNR, and I wonder if we're going to get away from that now. Although, I mean, they're always going to say no, the DNR is wrong with their deer estimates. But now I wonder if we won't get back to saying, well, that's kind of a soft number. You know, I know somebody who didn't or called in his deer to the wrong unit.
Yeah, it's. I like the idea though of going to a registration station. You see a little bit of it. You get a little story. It's the for those
Part
doubters, you go stand around there, and it shows up.
I remember as a kid, I would just hang around them and watch all the deer come in. It was fun. Well, gentlemen, let's take our final break here. Our time is running short, but we'll get back to the discussion with the outdoor guys and Mike Zechmeister. We'll wrap up the hour after this break. Also, if you want to try to squeeze in a call, we can probably take it. Number is 1-800-228-5615. This is the West Side Outside. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I'm joined by the outdoor guys. They are Dave Carlson and Joe Knight, and we're also joined by Mike Zechmeister of the DNR. He is based in Spooner, Wisconsin. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We could probably squeeze in one call, but we're going to basically finish up the hour. And Mike, just wondering if there's anything else you wanted to bring up ahead of our deer opener on Saturday.
Well, I think the most important thing is just be safe out there. Have a fun time. I mean, that's our tradition, and it's really a steeped tradition in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
hunting. It is so cool. It's so fun, and make sure you have fun out there. Enjoy the time and be safe about it.
All right, gentlemen, you guys have anything else?
It sounds like good advice. One thing I'll plug is, once again, in Eau Claire County, there will be mega dumpsters at Tower Ridge Ski Area parking lot and in the eastern side of the county at the Lake Eau Claire County Park, where deer hunters can deposit their carcasses. It's an attempt to keep them from throwing in roadside ditches.
Yeah.
And there's also going to be places where you can leave your deer hide, too, and that can cover, if enough hunters do that, that can cover some of the costs of disposing of those carcasses. Otherwise, Eau Claire Rod and Gun Club and Augusta or Rod and Gun are picking up the costs of that.
Yeah, part of that is, of course, the lead in the carcasses, too. Shoot copper, simple solution, right?
Yeah.
And also the venison donation program. We should plug that, too. That's turned in tons of food.
Great
food
program.
Pantries around the state over the years. And I think people ought to consider making those donations.
Absolutely. For our final call, we got one caller, and I'm going to get him on, and I'll probably run into trouble at the end of the hour. But Glenn in Spooner, you're on the air. If you could make your question or comment brief, we'd appreciate it.
I just got back from Minnesota with a telephone-registered buck. I found it very convenient, and it seems fairly foolproof because they have a registration number after you plug in all the information or answer their questions. They give you this number, which you write on your registration stub, and beware, you better have a number, and it better be the right one. So it seems pretty good.
Glenn, you did tell the truth about where you shot that buck.
Absolutely. On your,
okay. All right. Well, thanks so much, Glenn. And with that, I just wanted to bring up a point that news broke this weekend that the last episode of Northland Adventures will air December 29th. And Dave, if I may speak for some of your fans, we're going to miss the show and we're going to miss you as a host. So why retire now?
Well, I'm 66 and I've been talking about it, thinking about it. I feel strong, feel good. But I think by and large, we wouldn't be having this conversation if there'd be good advertising dollars out there. But on the other hand, the program should be going on, but it's not. There was always going to be a point where I would leave the program, and hopefully it would continue. But it's not, and I think I hope you'll invite me back here to even talk about the good old days when we did do it.
Oh, absolutely! That was another.
I'm going to continue to write, and actually down the road I might be doing some TV work for them, but that's not 100% decided at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think we ought to let Northland Adventures kind of the dust settle on it and let the light go out slowly. the last program, though, December 29th, it's not going to be the traditional, here's old stories we did, folks. It's going to be people, the people that have been on there numerous times, actually some maybe only a few times, going back to them and have them talk about what a program like this means to them and to society in general.
And we've got 1 minute, and I know it's ridiculous to ask this, but any best of memories or crazy moments or anything jump out right now?
Well, I just kind of toss it back to you. I really feel it's meeting the people.
Yeah.
Just one montage of their faces and their stories and the things that they were able to share through us with others. And the work I've been doing has always been about them and not what I've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what separated our show from others of other outdoor shows on television, on the both the cable systems and broadcast, regular local broadcast stations. We try to let them tell their stories, let them be the shining lights of this, keep the traditions alive, keep the issues facing our natural resources on the front burner always. That's probably the biggest thing, I think, that separated us from other programming. And hopefully something comes along to fill that niche.
Absolutely. Well, again, we'll miss you when your show. We'll miss Northland Adventures when it's no longer on, but we know you'll be out there and still busy and hopefully an outdoor guy for the foreseeable future. But, gentlemen, that's our time. Thank you so much. I'd like to thank my guests, Mike Zechmeister. He works for the DNR at their Spooner office. Joe Knight is the outdoors editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, and Dave Carlson is still host of Northland Adventures until the end of the year. Again, we'll miss you, Dave. Many thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, who handled on-air production, Henry Lippold, and many more. We'll chat again next week.